from KQED. From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. Back on April 1st, Governor Brown issued an executive order calling for a 25% cut in water use statewide. Water restrictions and fines for water wasting will vary from community to community, but one thing is clear, the pressure is on to save every drop. Coming up on Forum, we continue our Drought Watch series with a panel of experts talking about strategies for conserving water in our daily lives at home, at work, and wherever our routine takes us. Stay with us for that and give us a call with your tips as well. It's all ahead on Forum after this. From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. Earlier this week, Governor Brown called for legislation that would allow huge fines of up to $10,000 for wasting water. This comes as state regulators are hard at work deciding how to implement and enforce the governor's executive order to reduce water use in California by 25%. The pressure is definitely on to cut water use in cities and counties across the state now. On Forum this morning, we continue our Drought Watch series by diving into the nuts and bolts of how we can conserve more water in and around our homes, at work, and in our daily routines. Whether we're raising kids and have tons of laundry and dishes, or we're avid athletes needing a couple of showers a day, or renters with little control over the leaks in an old unit. With us are conservation experts who will share their strategies and tips. And we also want to hear from all of you out there with creative conservation savvy and ideas of your own on how to conserve and pinch pennies while you're trying to tackle this drought and the stresses that it's putting on our wallets. So if you'd like to join in the conversation, we're going to put the phone number out there right away, and you can weigh in and be expert as well. The number is 866-733-6786, or send your emails to forum@kqed.org. And our panel of guests include Julie Ortiz, and she's the Water Conservation Manager at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
Also with us is Stephanie Nevins, and she's the Water Conservation Supervisor at the Alameda County Water District, which serves the cities of Fremont, Newark, and the Union City area. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chris Dundon is with us. He's Conservation Supervisor at the Contra Costa Water District.
Good morning.
And also with us is Heather Cooley. She's the Water Program Director at the Pacific Institute, which is a water policy think tank. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Heather Cooley, I want to start with you because, you know, there's so much discussion about water conservation in all the different sectors of the economy. And we've heard a lot about agriculture, about industry and residential. And talk a little bit, put residential water use in the larger context of all of that. How much is conserving water in our homes a factor, and how big a role does that play in water conservation in California?
Okay, that's a great question. So when we first look at water use by people in California or by humans, about 80% does go to agriculture and 20% to urban. When we look at urban use specifically, about two-thirds is residential, about a third is commercial and industrial and institutional. So the residential piece is a large component of urban use. When we think about the drought and drought response, it's really important that we all do our part. Agriculture has made improvements. There's more they can do, certainly, but they have been reducing their use. They've becoming more efficient. We have a lot of potential still in California in our urban areas. If we look back at what urban use was 10 or 20 years ago, we are much more efficient than we were. More households are equipped with low water use appliances and fixtures. More and more people are replacing their lawns. That's great. We need to be doing more of that. And part of that is responding to the drought. But when we look in the long term, if we step back from the drought and we think about where the pressures are on our water resources, a lot of the new demands for for water are in our urban areas. So we need to be sure that we are using water as efficiently as possible. It helps us respond to this drought, but it also reduces our need to develop new, more expensive water supplies in the future.
So what would you say to folks who say, look, you know, we're doing everything we can individually. I'm tired of hearing that I need to chip in myself. I'm only 20% of this. What's your response?
Well, my response is, you know, if we look at urban use in California, household use in California, the average is about 140 gallons per person per day. Now, it varies around the state. Some areas are much lower than that. Some are higher. But when we look at Australia, for example, their household use is around 54 gallons per person per day. So it's almost 2.5 to 3 times higher here in California. So we have a lot of potential to be doing better.
And they're a comparable society. They're in an arid or a relatively dry ecosystem, and they're a Western, you know, modern. Everything about them is comparable.
Yes, yes. They have similar sort of lifestyle as we have in California.
Okay. And now take us out of the residential context and take us into a building like KQED or any kind of urban building.
So stepping away from residential, looking at commercial, industrial, institutional uses, that's about a third of urban use. And again, it varies depending on where you are, what community you're in. And they too have potential to be doing better. And part of that is in the landscape area, getting rid of some of the lawn, especially lawn that no one uses, which is much of the lawn for commercial, industrial, and institutional. And then looking indoors, looking at ways of using more efficient appliances and fixtures, ways of looking at new processes to reduce their use. So we have opportunity across the board. And in the end, in the long term, it saves money, it saves energy, and it's really part of building a sustainable water future in California.
And when I look at your report that came out of the Pacific Institute, I have to say I was really startled as sort of a layperson on this. There's a graph that you have that shows residential indoor and outdoor use, commercial indoor and outdoor use relative to industrial. And I got to say, it's pretty glaring that the residential indoor and outdoor dwarfs commercial and industrial both. So, you know, for a common complaint that I hear just as a person who's having dinner conversations with people saying, look, I'm so tired of hearing this, businesses and big, huge skyscrapers, they've got to be using way more water than I'm using. When you put the aggregate together, it's pretty clear that residential use is pretty heavy.
Yes.
All right. So now let's talk a little bit with our district representatives about what your different areas are doing, what the reduction mandate's going to be, and also what incentives your districts are offering. And I think let's just start with Stephanie Nevins, Alameda County. First of all, what do you expect your mandate for reductions going to be? I think those are going to be handed down in the next week or so. Is that right? And also, I know in your district, in Alameda County, you offer a whole host of incentives to help people start reducing. So why don't you talk a little bit about reduction and what you folks are offering to your residents?
Yeah, so with the current proposed state regulation, we would be in a 16% reduction category mandated by the state. But we asked for a 20% reduction last year, and we achieved it. We actually went a little bit over that. Our customers really stepped up and responded to our request, and this was really driven by a supply and demand need for our water district. We're going to continue to ask for 20%. So the 16% is the minimum that we have to achieve to be in compliance with the state, but we need 20% in our service area.
And why do you say that?
When we look at the supply and the constraints on our supply, just like we did last year, I mean, it's still there. So we need to still achieve that 20%, and we want to be able to go into potentially another dry year with enough to get us through again. So that's really what's driving it. We don't want to max out our supply. So we're going to keep doing what we've been doing, which is a lot of outreach, a lot of education, presentations to the community, and just providing a ton of programs, incentives, rebates. We're really pushing our lawn replacement program.
Talk about that.
So we're offering $1 per square foot to replace your lawn with low water use plants. And It's been very successful. We've converted just in the last year and a half over 200,000 square feet. And we've got 100 projects that are in process right now.
So you offer money back. If people take out take out lawn and replace it, you offer them money.
We give them money.
A rebate.
Yeah.
Okay. And talk about some beyond the lawn, because I don't want to get caught in a lawn that so much gets trapped in lawn land.
Right.
talk about some of the other programs. I know you offer low flow rebates. You offer lots of rebates. So talk a bit about some of those.
So the rebates we are offering right now for indoor water use is the high efficiency toilet rebates and high efficiency clothes washer rebates. There's a lot of potential in both those areas to get the water savings. And actually, our toilet rebate program just started recently. In the past, we hadn't offered one. And so we're really going after those 5-gallon, 3.5-gallon toilets in those older homes in our service area. And in fact, last year we also did a low-income home upgrade program. So we focused on those that had met a certain income and household size requirement, and we had a plumber go in and just upgrade everything that was a water-using fixture to make it efficient. And that was very successful and very welcomed by our low-income community, especially the older folks who have fixed incomes and older homes that they just haven't been able to upgrade for years.
Sure. What's the website that people can go to see what the offerings are?
It's www.acwd.org.
And that's where people can just see the list of things that are being offered.
Right. And we have a drought resource center on the main page. You just click on that, and everything that we're doing for drought action this year is listed there. We do have an ordinance in place with some watering restrictions and other things like that. So that's a great resource for our customers.
Okay. And all of the things that you're going to hear, we'll put up if there's web addresses and stuff, we'll put them on our website. And we're going to go to tips in a little bit. But first, I want to go through the district reps and hear what sorts of things they're offering. Now, Julie Ortiz, San Francisco is a whole different kettle, high density, urban, fewer lawns to contend with. But you've got a lot of rental units where people don't have control over a lot of aspects of their unit. Talk a bit about what your expected mandate cuts will be, and also what kinds of incentives or programs are available in San Francisco.
Well, our customers did a great job cutting back last year, so we are asking folks to keep it up. We're asking across the board for folks to try to reduce water use 10%. For our irrigation customers who have an irrigation account with us, we are looking to increase that from 10% to 25%. That would include our city's recreation and parks department and other big water users. We plan to, just like Stephanie said, in Alameda County, we are going to be continuing all of our incentive programs and services and assistance to our customers. We have quite a variety of offerings, whether folks own or rent, whether they're a business, and all different types of businesses. Those include rebates for replacement of old high water using fixtures, the old toilets, clothes washers, different styles there. We also offer free on-site WaterWise evaluations for homes and businesses.
So stop and explain that a little bit. What does a person do?
They call to schedule one with us, and then one of our trained technicians will come out and take a look at indoor and outdoor water use, provide suggestions for ways to save. They'll also look for leaks, so it can be a great way to assist in finding potentially real water wasting toilet leak or other plumbing fixture leak. So that's available to homes, to apartment buildings, to all different types of businesses.
And that's free of charge. And is there a long wait list for that?
It's free of charge. It depends on what size the facility is. It may take us a couple weeks to be able to schedule. But I would encourage folks to take a look at information on our website. They can find all of the information about our services at www.sfwater.org/conservation.
Okay. Okay. And any other programs you particularly want to mention?
Yeah, we have for our customers who have a direct account with us, we would encourage them to sign up for My Account. It's an online portal where they can view their daily, weekly, monthly water use, and it can be really helpful in helping them see trends. Are they using more than they thought? What days are they irrigating? What does that look like? Information is available on our website. Do encourage folks to sign up. We also have a whole variety of materials and handouts from signage that businesses can post in their public areas about water-saving tips to handbooks on how to save water if you have a garden in San Francisco with our unique climate. We offer that all free.
All right.
And we do, I wanted to add, provide free devices, the shower heads, aerators, standard toilet repair parts that folks can either come if they're in a single family home or a multifamily building under 10 units. They can pick those up for free at our headquarters at 525 Golden Gate Avenue. Or if they want to schedule a WaterWise evaluation with us, we'll bring them with us.
All right. And before I move on to you, Chris Dundon, I want to take a caller who's speaking on point to what Julia was just referring to. And Michael, I think that's you in Oakland.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi there.
So I live in an apartment that's definitely much larger than 10 units. And when I look around, I see a toilet that looks like it's older and therefore probably not very efficient and maybe leaking. And I see a shower head that, again, feels sufficiently forceful that I think it's probably wasting a lot of water, but I don't know. And I don't want to call up the building owner and have them come down and try and figure it out. They might not even know, and make a hassle out of it for them. I would love to have the equivalent of a WaterWise inspector come in and just, you know, privately have a look at my unit, and on the basis of that, be able to go to the building owner and say, you know, we inspected one of your units. This is what it looked like. We suspect probably all your other units are probably the same. You know, why don't we talk about this? Because it's building owners that only pay for the water, not me. So is there a way to arrange that, not as the homeowner, but as a renter inside a complex?
And would you want to take that on, Stephanie Nevins, as sort of Alameda County? Why is that not mandatory, that multi-unit buildings not get inspected that way?
Well, so in our service area, in a situation like this, what we would do, we welcome the individual tenants to call us because it gives us some insight into what's going on in their building. We can contact them. We would go directly to the owner, the customer on record for that multifamily housing unit or building, and we would offer to do a survey to inspect, you know, a sampling of units, and so we could make some recommendations, bring some free devices during the survey.
So, Michael, does that answer your question? It sounds like you would go to the water conservation, the water district folks. You don't even have to disturb or raise any hackles with your landlord. You would go to water conservation.
That sounds excellent. If I could get the actual direct contact info, that'd be great.
How does one do it, Stephanie?
So in Oakland, it's East Bay Municipal Utility District. And so I believe their website is www.ebmud.org. So go to their website, look up the conservation department on their website, and you'll find a contact number.
So basically, I think, and would that apply to all of you? That would be for all of you. So go to your water district and go to the conservation unit and alert them. And I think it's sounding like all of you are nodding. So if for apartment dwellers, if you're self-conscious about alerting your landlord and don't want to get on anybody's bad side, go to your water district and go to the conservation folks there and just say, hey, this is where I live. This is my building. And I'm worried about the water pressure. It's just so darn good. And maybe that's an avenue. So thanks, Michael, for the call. That's great.
Thank you.
So, Chris Dundon, why don't you talk a little bit about Contra Costa County, your water district, and first of all, what do you expect the mandate cutbacks to be, and where are you guys going to come down, and also some of the incentive programs?
So, Contra Costa Water District, which supplies Central and also East Contra Costa County, Our program, we're looking to cut 25% compared to 2013. This is a big cut because our customers have really saved since before 2008. They've reduced about 25% already.
So they did a good job in the first place, but you still want to cut back that much.
Yeah, based on this mandate, we really need to get more. So what we're asking is a 25% reduction. We're asking for more actually out of landscape irrigation accounts. And we will be going to our board in early June. We have a program started now, and the program will kick in June. We have seen a massive interest in our program right now. There was a little talk about multifamily. We've got them lining up outside the door for free shower heads that we give them. And normally in a non-drought year, we'll go out and we'll inspect a few of the units, and we can provide free shower heads. Now they just line up and we'll give them to them and we sign them off because it's faster. Some of our main programs for residential, our biggest program right now is our lawn to garden rebate program. It is off the charts. We've got a lot of interest in that program. In the year 2013, we gave out about 350 applications. In April, as of yesterday, I've given out nearly 800 applications for this month alone.
And is this similar to what Stephanie Nevins has? So
yes.
You take out your lawn, we give you money, you plant other than lawn.
Exactly, yes. And that program is doing very well right now. We have a free home survey program. This is kind of our cornerstone program for residential, where we do a water conservation audit of their house. And this is fabulous because people really don't know where they're using their water and how much they're using. And when we go and do an audit and they're taking 3-minute showers and they're saving a bucket of water, which is fabulous, but they've got 5 stations of irrigation that's running at 12 gallons a minute each for 10 minutes every day. So when we go and teach them that, that's probably one of the best programs we have. We have a number of programs for commercial, multifamily, and residential. And, of course, we have washer rebates like the others and the free devices.
All right. Well, so that's sort of a round table, a roundup. We've got a lot of callers. And I know we're going to take a break in just a couple of minutes. So I want to go back to you, Heather Cooley. After the break, we'll go right to the phone bank. But Heather Cooley, just in hearing what you've just heard around this table, are there any places that you just consistently in at the Pacific Institute that you just know that people are missing opportunities to be saving water on an individual home level that they don't think about, that they don't realize?
Well, I think this drought has really highlighted lawns. If we look at urban use, about half is outdoors, and much of that is for landscaping and is for lawns. And so we're seeing a transition. I think people are recognizing that there are other beautiful landscapes we can have in California that use a lot less water. They not only use less water, but they provide habitat. There are many people that are enjoying doing gardening. So there's a tremendous opportunity there, I think. And as you've heard, for the water districts that do have these types of programs, they are oversubscribed. I mean, there's tremendous amount of interest, and that will continue to grow. It's really going to change how we look at landscapes in California.
All right. Well, we are talking this hour about water conservation. It's part of our Drought Watch series. And coming back from the break, we're going to go to your calls, lots of them on the line. And we want to hear your tips and conservation ideas about what you do at home, also what you do at work and in your daily life. And also if you've altered your lifestyle and your routine at all to save water. Talking with a lot of experts, want to hear from you. I'm Penny Nelson. You're listening to Forum, and we'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Penny Nelson, and we're talking this hour about water conservation tips and ideas and strategies as we tackle the drought unendingly, so it seems. And with us for the hour is Julie Ortiz, Water Conservation Manager at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, Stephanie Nevins, Water Conservation Supervisor for Alameda County Water District, and Chris Dundon, Conservation Supervisor at the Contra Costa Water District. Also with us is Heather Cooley. She's the Water Program Director at the Pacific Institute. And we were talking right before the break about lawns. And with us on the phone is Guillermo from Oakland, and he has been tackling the very issue of lawns. And Guillermo, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi.
How are you? Thank you for taking my call. The question that I have is, I'm a professional landscape, and we have a few clients who actually are applying for the rebate programs through East Bay Mud, as well through other programs that are available to convert their irrigation systems into drip system and to remove the existing lawns. And we submit the applications. We're waiting, and the applications never, we never hear from. And I wonder what is the bureaucracy behind. Is a lack of staff? Is too much paperwork going on? Or that just really, it's just a matter of just, hey, yes, we want you to be conscious about this, but we are not going to process this because we don't want to pay money for it. I mean, it's just ridiculous the amount of time they wait for certain applications that we put on, and we have not been here yet from.
Okay, Chris Dundon, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yes, yeah, so it sounds like he's talking about East Bay Mud, and I do know that they're extremely busy right now with the flood of applications. Typically, what the water district wants is to, once you submit the application, we just want to get out quickly to measure the landscape because we're giving ratepayer money, so we need to measure to be pretty accurate. If we're going to give up to $1,000 for a home or maybe up to $10,000 for a commercial business, we want to make sure we measure it, and we need to get out there and measure it. Once we do that, we send the customer a notice to proceed letter, and they're good to go. And typically that takes a couple of weeks turnaround, but maybe what he's dealing with is a backlog because of the drought.
Guillermo, what has the response been of the people that you're working with? Are they getting so frustrated that they are...
Basically, they're getting frustrated. They are want to proceed. They have certain budget to work with, and they decide, you know what, I will now maybe I have to be thinking about it, whether I want to remove my lawn or not. There are other ones that are very conscious, and they've been turning off their waters and say, yes, we will wait for it and see how long it's going to take. But even when we call East Bay Mud or other organizations, the answer is, sure, we're working on.
Right, right. All right. Well, I'm sure, the backlogs, I'm sure, are throughout the area. And thanks, Guillermo, for calling in. Have the rest of you experienced that? Do you know Julie Ortiz or Stephanie Evans? Is that your experience as well going on in your district, backlogs?
Well, it takes a little time to process the applications. We get thousands of applications for rebate and fixture change out. So we do try to move those along, but they're reviewed by our accounting department, and then there's a few steps before we could issue the check. But in case of doubt, we, do let folks know, please contact us if you're wondering where it is in the process.
And Stephanie Nevins, this is one of these situations where you're going to want to appeal to the governor and say, look, if you want this to work, you better streamline this or at least give us the personnel to make it happen, because people are going to get frustrated and you're going to get shut down.
Yeah. In fact, last year when we really started getting a huge influx of the applications for the turf replacement program, we ended up hiring a couple of interns to help us out with the extra workload. And they're wonderful. We were really fortunate to find some great interns to help us out with this.
Maybe people could write to the governor and say, we're on board, but you need to give the districts the personnel to handle the good cause. So, all right, let's go to another call. We've got Manu calling from Sunnyvale.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was planning to talk about swimming pools. I know there are about 1.2 swimming pools in California.
Wait, 1.2 million? Sorry, Manu, let's back up. 1.2 million? Do you know that number?
Swimming pools? Residential swimming pools in California? So I'm trying to find out what incentives are there to address water evaporation. I've already stopped watering my lawn. I have no water usage from the lawn, but I still have to fill my swimming pool, just because I don't want cracks in that and leaks and, have any construction work because of that. So by far, with above normal temperatures, there's more water evaporation, and I have to put more water into my pool, which I don't use as much. So what are your thoughts about that, and are there any incentives for taking care of, either doing some other incentives to close the swimming pool or, reduce evaporation or other ideas regarding that?
All right. Thanks for the call. And do you know, Heather Cooley, how can somebody be a responsible homeowner? They're trying to – how can somebody do this?
Well, with pools, what you want to do is put a pool cover on, and that will reduce the evaporation from the pool. So that's an important first step. The other thing to do is to check for leaks, because pools can leak, and some pools have an autofill, and so the homeowner may not even know it's happening. So it's important to be vigilant to be sure you don't have leaks, and then to use a pool cover as well.
What's going on? And I know this is a Bay Area-focused show, but especially down in Southern California, and in the drier parts of the state, are the restrictions at all applying to pools and the more luxurious aspects of water use?
Yeah, so the way that the proposal from the state board is structured is depending on your household water use, your per capita water use, that determines the level of restriction. So if you have a lower per capita water use, or your district does, then generally the reduction is in and around 8%. If you're at the higher end, then they're asking for a 36% reduction in water use. So for some of those areas that are at the higher end, in some cases are several hundred gallons per person per day, they're being asked to cut by 36%.
All right. But on the other hand, you know, there's Manu trying to do the responsible thing. He owns a home with a pool, and he wants to do the right thing, even, but also protect his investment. We've got a whole bunch of emails coming in. Let's take some of them. We've got Matt writing, I'm required by my homeowner association to maintain a green lawn. What can I do? And if it matters, I'm in Sonoma County. Heather, or wait, who wants to? I guess
I'll start.
Chris.
Maybe Heather can jump in. There is a state law that prohibits an HOA from requiring you to have a lawn. An HOA can require you through their CC&Rs to have a well-maintained landscape to meet the standards of the community you're in, but they cannot mandatorily say you have to have lawn.
All right, and we just got a similar email, but that is a concern that a lot of people have had, and also renters are in the same situation, and that passed just last year, right?
Yes.
Passed last year. Okay, another writer from this one from Alameda says, my family of four cut its use by about a third last year simply by letting our very small front lawn die. We still water our shrubs and garden, still shower daily, but just letting a little piece of grass go. Why are there any green lawns left? So back to the lawns, which I guess is just a very big issue. Another listener writing, wonder if your guests could address the potential to start using gray water recovery systems. Use recovered gray water to flush toilets, etc., and don't require potable water. Anyone want to jump on that?
Yeah, in San Francisco, we have quite a lot of resources and information available on how residential customers can put in gray water systems or reuse rainwater. We have, in fact, a real handy manual up on our website for folks who might be interested in using gray water for irrigating their landscape. We have offered an incentive program for helping folks put in what we call laundry to landscape systems. So that's using your wash water from your clothes washer to help water your garden. We'll be restarting that incentive program soon. We also have a lot of information and videos on how to install rain barrels, which homeowners can use, again, to offset irrigation. In terms of using gray water, rainwater for toilet flushing, we provide guidance as well. That's a little bit more complicated, would involve getting permits, but do encourage listeners to go to our website, sfwater.org, and search for rain barrels or rainwater harvesting.
All right. Talking about water conservation, I want to hear some more of your tips. We're looking for tips on what you do and also looking for tips for what you do at work. If there are any things that you do at work, I'm going to share a little secret of mine. I'm always looking for ways to use water at work instead of at home. Now, I don't know that there are so many. I used to try to figure out how I could shower at the gym instead of showering at home. Any way I can use water at work and not at home, I'm looking for it. I know that's not right, but that's one of the things I'm always trying to do. If you have little secret hints of your own, tips, hints, give us a call, 866-733-6786, or send us an email to forum at kqed.com. Org. Here's a couple tips that just came in. Turn off the faucet between soaping while in the shower, and that's come into a couple different on a couple different emails. Don't wait for the water to heat up. It's more efficient than a cup of coffee. I don't know if I'm good with that one. Fill the sink halfway with water while shaving, and while washing your hands, soap up before turning on the faucet, and finish your water at a restaurant. Michelle writing in, to save water, I now take a bucket bath instead of a shower. Heat some water in a tea kettle, pour it in a bucket, add a little cool water, and there you have it. And then I bring the bucket to the shower and use an old pitcher as a scoop. All I need is a quarter of a bucket for my bath, and it's better than taking a shower. And then let's go back to the phones. We've got Yvette on the line, and she's calling from Pleasanton. Hi, Yvette.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Last year, we were shocked at how much we were able to cut our water usage as a family of four just by simply doing what we call the bucket brigade. We basically, in the shower, you know, because we're going to wash our hair, first of all, all those girls shave our legs in the tub, with just a tiny little bit of water before we take our shower. Then in the shower, while we're letting that water warm up, let it fill up a bucket, which is shocking how much in just letting the water warm up it takes. And then as well, I have, big bowls in each of my sink basins, and we capture every washing hand, every ounce of gray water we try and capture, and we just call it the bucket brigade, taking it outside. And we've been able to nurse our back lawn that was only put in a few years ago, so we'd hate to lose it. It is a part of, you know, the home experience, and so we're actually nursing along with all that gray water in a stopgap measure until we can find a way to get the plumbing systems put in to capture that gray water. So that's how we're doing it, and we were shocked that we actually cut our water usage by 50% just by doing that, as well as, of course, limiting how much we, you know, then water the whole lawn. So that was a great tip, and I'd like to share it with everyone out there, because it's something you can do right now.
Very good. Thanks, Yvette. Great call. Thank you. Heather Cooley?
Yeah, in addition to doing things like the shorter showers, this is really an opportunity to start replacing some of those old fixtures that many of us have. There are a lot of new fixtures that use considerably less water than even ones that were on the market 5 and 10 years ago. So I would encourage listeners to replace their shower heads, look at replacing their toilets, look for, in particular, for the WaterSense label. That's a program that's run by EPA. It identifies appliances and fixtures that use less water, that meet certain standards of operation, so they work very well. This is an opportunity to really get rid of those old appliances and fixtures, put in the new ones, look to your water utilities to see if they have rebates, and if they don't, go ahead and make that investment, because what it does is it reduces the cost over the long term. A lot of these appliances and fixtures, if you look at the cost over the, you know, they have a little bit of a higher upfront cost, but if you look at the savings over the lifetime, they're very cost effective.
Anybody have tips on how to make a yard kid friendly but without a lot of lawn? That's what one of the email questioners is asking.
I'll address that. You can have a very kid friendly yard. My yard is very kid friendly. It doesn't have to be a big soccer field. We have a park to go for that. So we don't have any lawn. We've got a dry creek. My kids played with action figures out there. But you can also, if you want a flat meadow area, you can use some native bunch grasses. You don't mow them. One of the keys of the water use in a lawn is you mow it every week, and you fertilize it, and you create this growth, and then you throw that into landfill or hopefully into a compost pile. But if you get a bunching grass and you don't mow it except maybe once a year, it's going to have a lot less growth, which means it has a lot less water use.
All right. I have a tip I'm going to throw out that is my favorite tip. I pull very wet clothes out of the rinse cycle, and I hang them over my trees, and then I put them in a bucket, and then I hang them over trees, and then the water drips onto my tree base, and that waters my trees, but then I also throw my next load into the rinse cycle so the tub is full, and then I don't need to refill the tub. And then I continually do that. Of course, my backyard looks horrible because there's clothes hanging from every tree, and my neighbors may not appreciate it, but that is what I do. And on that note, I will go to our next caller, and that would be Shelley calling us from Oakland. Hi, Shelley.
Hi there. I have a restaurant, the Growler's Arms in Oakland, and what we do is we take all the unused water after the guests leave off the table, as well as the water that the chefs use to clean all the vegetables. And we put that water into 5-gallon buckets. And then the chef or myself, chef has a garden at his house where he grows vegetables for the restaurant. He takes those buckets home and waters the garden.
Great. Great. Boy, yeah, now restaurants would be water intensive. So what are some of the other things you could do? What do you do about washing? Boy, you must have a lot of water.
Yeah, I didn't realize exactly how much came off of the tables and how much water they used to clean all the lettuces and vegetables, because any night we'll take home anywhere from 2 to 4 5-gallon buckets of water. They sell them with lids, so they're pretty easy to transport. It's kind of heavy, but chef is strong. And, we save a lot. Seems like a lot of water that way.
Are you, Shelley, are you diligently following the rule of not serving water until you ask the guests?
Yes, we are. We ask the guests. Most people still want water, but every once in a while you'll get the odd person that doesn't want it. And we also usually serve it in carafes, but we started serving it in smaller carafes, and we don't automatically fill them. And we used to always ask people if they wanted. We used to always just automatically bring fresh silverware for like a second course, but now we're not automatically doing that either. We're just bringing making people aware that, you know, how much water goes into cleaning all that silverware and all the dishes.
Oh, that's an interesting point, too, because the fewer dishes that you use, that's a conservation issue as well. All right. Thanks, Shelley. Thanks for calling in. And Chris Dundon, I know you wanted to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I might add for restaurants, most water utilities have rebates. One of the more intensive water uses is their single-rack dishwashers. A lot of energy use and a lot of water use. And if you get a really efficient one, you can cut the water use and energy significantly and probably get a rebate from your local utility.
All right. Boy, a lot of emails coming in. This one is saying, California's severe drought is putting backyard pools under the microscope. A handful of Bay Area cities have now stopped using permits to build new pools. Now stopped issuing permits to build new pools. Other cities, including Novato and Morgan Hill, have restrictions in place to keep residents from filling their pools. The California Pool and Spa Association is pushing hard against these new regulations. The associations said by the third year after installation, a backyard pool uses less water than a traditionally irrigated lawn. So that's an interesting issue right there. 2 points on that. Or two different sides of the issue on that. Another listener writes, David writing, a hot water recirculating pump can save a ton of water, so you don't just run cold water down the drain waiting for hot water. It's easy to install and does not require any new plumbing. Mary Beth is writing, when I wash my face at night, I don't run the water until it gets hot. Fill a face cloth with cold water, then pop it in the microwave for 30 seconds to heat it, and it's like a green spa facial. And then Carol writes in, when cooking, I keep 2 bowls of hot water, one with soap and one plain, and use them to clean my hands as I go. When done, I soak things prior to the dishwasher. But boy, that's a good idea with the 2 bowls. Okay, Gabe in Petaluma is writing, do your guests recommend that homeowners with a well on their property hook it up to their irrigation? Any thoughts? I'm not sure I understand what that would do. If you have a well, isn't that your irrigation system anyway?
If a customer has a well and you're going to hook up to that, if you're not using it, yes, you can hook it up to your irrigation system. Be very careful you don't cross-connect between the well water and the city water, the water district water, because if you get a cross-connection, you can be putting well water into your house and you'll be drinking it and then into the city water. So you got to make sure you have a separation for the two.
All right. And going with one more of these, regarding getting rebates, be very careful to understand the details. We got burned by the Marin Municipal Water District when we spent a fair amount of money to get a good low-flow toilet that saved more water than our current one. But the Marin Municipal Water District said that the former owner already got the rebate 10 years ago, and we were not qualified for one. So that's an interesting point as well. And now here's a question from one of our emailers. If you were to replace one appliance, what would it be of all of the different options? And let's go to you, Stephanie.
One appliance. I would go for the clothes washer.
Okay.
If you have a clothes washer that is a top loader, go out and get a front loader washing machine. They are incredibly efficient these days. You could be saving 30-plus gallons per load.
Wow.
So if you're doing a load a day, which I feel like I do because I've got two small children, then it's a huge savings.
That's a lot. That's how much water I'm feeding my trees?
Yeah. Potentially. Yeah.
And Heather? And one of the benefits, I think, of the front-loading clothes washer is it also reduces energy use because most people are using hot water or warm water for washing their clothes. And so by using less water, there's less heating. And that is a tremendous benefit financially as well.
So you agree that of all the options, the appliance that is the most water efficient you could save on is the washing machine?
That would probably be at the top of my list. Although if I had an old toilet, particularly a 6 gallon per flush, I would do that as well.
Okay. And Julie?
I was just going to second on the toilet. We still do see some of the old pink and green toilets in San Francisco, and those can be flushing 3.5 gallons, 5 gallons or more. That's a considerable amount of water wasted that can be saved with the high efficient ones.
Okay. So if you do have a real old house with a real traditional old toilet, That's a consideration. And Chris Dundon?
And I would echo, it really depends on your household situation, but the three fixtures inside are the toilet, the washer, and the showerhead. Showerhead's cheap or free. The toilet is next in price, and then the washer. But the biggest fixture in my service area is the lawn. The lawn is the biggest water-using fixture, and if we remove that, you're going to save more than any of them.
All right. Another listener writing in says, one of the best ways to save water is to stop eating meat. Livestock necessitates enormous amounts of water. And here's a question. Please make a distinction between potable water and other water. And I think that's a really good question because we throw around the term potable as if everybody knows these days. Heather Cooley, why don't you tackle that?
So potable water is water that's treated such that it's okay for human consumption, so just that we can drink it. Non-potable water is water that we don't use for drinking. We could use it for lawns. We could use it for flushing toilets, those types of things. Most homes are really just have potable water delivered to them. So that's what they're using both indoors and outdoors.
All right. Thanks. And let's go back to our callers. We've got Jane calling us from Corte Madera. Hi, Jane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The other day on your station, somebody from Santa Barbara was interviewed, and apparently Santa Barbara is the king and queen of water conservation, and they even have a desal plant which they're not using. So maybe contacting them or maybe somebody going down and seeing them or getting them on the line to hear just exactly what they're doing to be so conservation conscious. And another thing I'd like to mention is, you know, lawns, people overwater lawns. A lawn does not need to be watered every day, every other. Once a week is sufficient. And as far as gardens are concerned, I have a three-station drip, and it hasn't been turned on since the last rain, and my plants seem to be very happy, thank you. So look and see if a leaf is wilting before you water your plants. And if you're going to replace lawns, replace them with natives. Lawns do not attract anybody except kids and whatever you put your lawn in for in the first place. But natives attract butterflies and bees and hummingbirds, and that's good for our ecology.
Right. Thanks, Jane. Thanks for calling in. And let's go next to Brian, who's calling us from Mill Valley.
Hi. So I live in Marin, and when my wife and I started looking at using gray water and harvesting rainwater, the Marin Municipal Water District was very clear that rainwater collectors have to be isolated from gray water. They are not the same because Marin uses rainwater runoff as part of its water source. So residents, and this goes jurisdiction by jurisdiction, you have to check with your water district whether or not you can actually collect rainwater and how much you can collect and whether or not it has to be isolated because it is not the same as gray water. Marin lives off of rainwater, and I happen to be very lucky. I live in the fog district, so I don't have to worry about watering anything. But as far as gray water recycling, they said if you don't need rainwater collection, don't do it.
Anyone want to?
It negatively impacts those with wells, the water table, the overall available, what they would call collectible water in the environment. And that is very specific to Marin because we use lakes as collections.
That's interesting. Let's get some input from Heather Cooley on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, in most areas, rainwater harvesting or putting in these cisterns is a good thing. It does provide a water supply benefit. You get water that you can then use to irrigate your garden. In addition, it can help reduce runoff. In many urban areas, it's those first rains in particular and runoff from our streets that pollutes local streams and reservoirs and even the bay. And so this is an opportunity for us to capture that water, to use it as water supply, but also to provide a water quality benefit as well.
So, I mean, I can see his point, but I can see, you know, it would be, there's a push and pull in that one. All right, let's try to squeeze in another call real quickly. Herb calling us from San Francisco. And Herb, we're really out of time, so be real quick.
Really quick. Lots of construction sites in San Francisco, and many of them use huge amounts of water just to wet the dirt so it doesn't go up in the air.
All right.
There's one of fire hydrant-sized hoses. What do you do about that?
Okay. Quick response?
Well, yes, they can apply for a permit and use recycled water for controlling their dust at construction sites. We have information about that on our website.
Okay, and that was Julie Ortiz from San Francisco, and we unfortunately have come to the end of our hour, and thanks to the rest of our guests, Stephanie Nevins with Alameda County Water District, Chris Dundon, Conservation Supervisor at Contra Costa Water District, and also Heather Cooley was with us from the Pacific Institute. So thanks to all of you for being with us this hour. Far too much to get to in just 60 minutes, and thanks to all of the callers and emailers as well. Well, stay with us in the next hour. We'll be talking about the benefits of stress, if you can believe it. Stanford psychologist and author Dr. Kelly McGonigal will be with us to explain how stress can be our friend. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is birthday boy Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Penny Nelson in for Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.